Morning, everyone. I'd like to call the February 2nd, 2008 session of the House Workforce and Economic Development Committee to order, and would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3606. We have signed up today Paul Evans and Tom Byerly, and as they're coming up, Patrick, if you could summarize the bill for us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, House Bill 3606 is one of the package of bills that was drafted after our January 14th hearing regarding the December storms. It would authorize the governor to waive the one-week waiting period for payment of unemployment insurance benefits following declaration of an emergency to individuals residing within the affected disaster areas. And the measure as written appropriates $121,500 to the Employment Department for retroactive payment of unemployment benefits to individuals within the affected area covered by the emergency declaration following that storm event in Northwest Oregon. And the measure has an emergency clause and would take effect upon passage. Also, this measure as written has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. You have in your packets, we just received this morning, the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3606, and I believe our panelists are going to be here to speak to those amendments and to their effect on the bill.
Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Evans, a policy advisor for Governor Kulongoski, and Mr. Byerly from the Employment Department. We're going to try to explain the bill today, and he's actually going to be answering the tough questions. But I wanted to kind of set the stage. The bill before you is the bill we would like to have. Unfortunately, life being as complicated as it is, the federal government has a few things that prevent us from having the bill that we'd like. So what I'd like to do today, sir, is explain what the purpose of the bill was, what we're going to try to propose, the fixes that we are working on currently, and why it really is an important bill, even as amended. First, the bill was designed to try to help the folks that were most significantly impacted during the December storms in the three economic recovery zones that were identified by the governor's recovery cabinet in the Clatsop County area, in the Vernonia-Columbia region, and in the Tillamook County area. There, I believe there are 450 claimants that we tried to help. The goal is that in some states, and this is where it gets a little bit complicated, but in some states, a governor can waive the one-week required waiting period for folks to begin receiving unemployment benefits. Unfortunately, Oregon is not one of those states that can do that without at least taking an economic hit. The bottom line is that if this bill goes through as drafted, as we hoped that it could, the $121,500 to appropriated to help the folks that need it, we would end up, I believe, with a $10.2 million hit to the Treasury, which isn't a good trade. So that's the situation. Again, specifics. What we're going to try to do, though, sir, is we have an amendment before you that would mirror what Washington State has so that that's in place. And the other track is working with our federal congressional delegation on trying to change the law so that next emergency, Oregon's governor can waive or at least help reimburse the folks that have that situation before them. So with that in mind, I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Byerly.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tom Byerly, Administrator for the Employment Insurance Division for the Employment Department. Appreciate you taking the time this morning out of your busy schedules. First of all, I'd like to say that working on this bill and what we've been trying to do to get the waiting week waived has been quite a challenge, but I have to hand it to Mr. Evans for getting Senator Wyden's and Representative Hooley's staff on board, because we do indeed need some federal law changes to make the situation a better thing. The December storm on the North Coast created an issue where those that qualified for regular unemployment insurance benefits were required to serve a one-week waiting week as required by Oregon law on their unemployment insurance claim. Those that did not qualify for regular unemployment insurance benefits, because the disaster was declared on Saturday, December 1st, were not required to have a waiting week, because disaster unemployment assistance begins payment the week following the week in which the disaster was declared. So we had some people that didn't have a waiting week. We had some people that did have a waiting week. The attempt was to alleviate that and make the playing field level. Makes a ton of sense. That's where we went to bat and learned that, well, if we did that, which is waiving the waiting week by the governor, is allowable under federal law. That's not an issue at all. The state of California has that, and several states do. The issue becomes in Oregon, and I'll try to slow down and make sense of this. When you file an unemployment insurance claim, you have a 1 week waiting week and then 26 weeks of regular benefits normally. Following those 26 weeks of regular benefits, if a state's insured unemployment rate reaches a certain level, you can what we call trigger on to an extension. It's a 13-week benefit extension in addition to the 26 weeks of regular benefits. Oregon goes on to this 13-week extension fairly regularly, every 6 or 7 years, as the economy goes up and down. As you know, we're naturally resource-driven, so we have a pretty volatile economy in Oregon. The first extension, the extended benefits program I'm talking about, is covered 50% by the Oregon Trust Fund and 50% by the Federal Trust Fund. So for every week of that 13 weeks that is paid, we pay half, the feds pay half. Now, when it comes to waiving the waiting week, back in 1972, a law was written that said if you waive the waiting week for any reason, the feds will not reimburse you for that first week of extended benefits. So what happens when we trigger onto extended benefits the first week, we would then have to pay the full 100% of that first week, and then the federal government would take over and reimburse us 50-50 for the next 12. Based on the 2002 recession numbers, and adjusting them how economists can, they do that magic math, figure out how many people we could expect to be on extended benefits next time we trigger on, it would be about a $10.2 million loss to the trust fund if we waived the waiting week. So here we are, faced with that dilemma, and quite frankly, if I could just be candid, I'm growing a little weary coming before you guys to tell you I'd love to help, but the federal government has a penalty. With that said, again, referring back to what Mr. Evans has been doing with the congressional delegation, we have proposed language to them that they can possibly get through in federal law. And if I may, real quick, just get right to the section in federal law. It talks about waiving the waiting week and that you can't waive the waiting week if the state provides for payment in any time or any circumstance of regular compensation for the first week of otherwise compensable unemployment, the waiting week. What we want to insert thereafter at any time is language that would say, other than where such first week of unemployment is a result of a major disaster declared by the President under the Robert T. Stafford Disaster Relief and Emergency Assistance Act. Now, that language has been fleshed out through the U.S. Department of Labor. They think that will probably get the fix that we need. So, if we could work with states like us that regularly go on to extended benefits and would be penalized every way the waiting week, maybe we can get federal law change to help us achieve that. With that said, we have some amendments to House Bill 3606 that would basically set us up that if the federal law was changed, then we could kick that waiver authority into law for the governor. But until then, the law will just stay on the books until federal law allows it without a penalty. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions for our panel? I'm not seeing any from the committee. I do have one. If we remove the language that refers to the benefits for the first week, do you know if that removes our obligation then to refer this bill to Ways and Means?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think it would. I mean, originally when this bill was put together, the 121.5 was actually a placeholder because we were hoping that if the Oregon Declared Emergency Recovery Fund passes, that actually it would come out of that source. So it was originally designed to try to take that out anyway, and in this particular case, I think it very much would because it couldn't go into action until federal laws changed anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be a prudent move, sir.
Mr. Chair, if I may, We were really trying to find a way to be innovative and reimburse this waiting week with any other funding source, with the thought being if we could find another source other than the trust fund, the federal government would not care. It turns out if you reimburse that waiting week for any reason, I mean, right now when they're in the midst of our food drive and my staff do a tremendous job of soup sales, bake sales to raise money, we could do that to waive the waiting to pay for the waiting week, they would still consider it a waiver and we'd be penalized.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I know that at this point, even with the amendment, the bill is not going to help a lot of people in the short term. But it's an important bill, I think, for two reasons. One, it sends a signal that we're doing everything possible we can, which I think those symbols are important. The other thing is, quite frankly, it is frustrating, and I think it's a matter of policy that needs to be emphasized through a statutory change, that the federal government currently punishes the most volatile economies by this type of action. And through your peers across the country and the National Conference of State Legislatures and friends across the board, I'm pretty certain that the federal government doesn't intend to do it this way, especially if it's being paid for by the state, right? So it's one of those situations that I truly think that highlighting it and putting it into law and then sharing the fact that we're putting it into law because the federal government wouldn't allow us to do it can change a policy that I think in the long term, if we have it in place, the next time around, we'll be able to help people that we should be able to help this time, but we just can't.
Thank you very much. Well, I just want to recognize that Senator Johnson was the first person to bring this issue forward. And this obviously, as she stated, is an issue that has begged to be addressed. And I think, as you have correctly pointed out, the fact that we are attempting to do everything that we can is important. And we found a problem, and the fact that it may be better. It's better if we pass this. It will be significantly better if we are able to get the necessary federal legislation to address what is a speed bump, frankly, for folks to be able to address a problem in a economic downturn. And most certainly I think we're going to face similar situations in the future, but I think we can be proud, even if we can't provide these benefits for people who were recently impacted by the storm, that Oregon, once again, is in a leading role nationally trying to get this legislation changed at the federal level. So I thank you both for your efforts in that regard, and I thank Senator Johnson for bringing this issue forward.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Please.
I'm actually getting credit for something that was raised by another, and I want to make sure that we're clear on the record about this. I have some testimony this morning, and I would be pleased to deliver it if that was...
If you would, please.
Actually, I'm going to go down and join the panel. The genesis of this whole discussion arose in a meeting that the governor convened in the immediate aftermath of the storm up in Astoria that was attended by a number of community people. I bet Paul was there. There were probably 80 people in the room. And one of the folks that spoke very eloquently was Mark Winstanley, who is the city manager of the city of Seaside. And it was Mark that actually first surfaced this problem. He wanted to be here this morning. He couldn't. He faxed me his testimony last night, and out of respect for Mr. Winstanley, I'm going to do something I usually don't do, and that's to read text that you have in front of you. But I would like this to become part of the permanent record, so by your leave, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Please accept this testimony to be read into the record in support of a proposed bill to give the governor emergency power to waive the waiting period for unemployment benefits in the case of an emergency. As the storm wound down and people began to assess the damage from the most severe weather in decades, many hardworking people who form the backbone of the coast service economy, contacted their employers to begin the process of recovery and the return to normalcy. Unfortunately, with the power out and motels, hotels, restaurants, and shops all closed, these hardworking, dedicated employees were told little or no work was available. These are not salaried workers, but people who work paycheck to paycheck. These are workers that get paid only if they work, workers that can only pay their bills if they get paid. With the coast without power for 5 to 6 days, many lost a week's worth of income. Imagine the problems many of these people faced with little or no savings, trying to pay the rent and buy food with 70 to 80% of their normal income in December. To try and make ends meet, many tried to file for unemployment benefits, but the state of Oregon requires a waiting period before workers are eligible for benefits. But surely, in the case of a declared emergency, Oregon can waive this requirement. Unfortunately, unlike our neighbors to the north and the south, no one has the power to waive these requirements and help the most vulnerable in our economy. Homes can be repaired, businesses made whole, and infrastructure rebuilt. But the waitresses and waiters, the maids, the janitors, and the shop clerks cannot be given the same consideration. Please let us learn from this experience and allow the governor to suspend the waiting period in times of emergency. Please allow us to meet the needs of the workers with the same urgency that we met the physical needs in our community. The next storm may be just around the corner, the next tsunami tomorrow, the next flood caused by melting snowpack this spring. So please provide for these workers that are so vulnerable. Thank you for the opportunity to support this effort. Sincerely, Mark Winstanley, City Manager, City of Seaside.
Thank you
for having the opportunity to make that part of the record. Mark made this very compelling case when the governor was there, and it was clear we had a problem. I am delighted that this committee and the testimony in January was responsive enough to sponsor this legislation. I agree with the observations that while it may stop just short of the perfect in this instance, we've at least paved the way to take care of these folks in the next emergency. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Well, thank you very much, Senator. And Mr. Winstanley's statement is as compelling today as it was after the initial disaster, and please thank him for his statement. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor this too much, but I'm just kind of curious, you know, being spending most of my life as a wage earner in an industry that had, you know, many downtimes between jobs as such, I've always kind of wondered what the policy at the federal level was regarding the waiting week to start with. As somebody who's laid off, you know, waiting for the next job, and you don't get credit for this week that has been paid into, and oftentimes you end up not collecting that week ever. So is it just what's the policy behind that at the federal level, if you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holden, that's a great question, and it's a question that I have dealt with throughout my 28-year career. The federal government, when they drafted this, came out of the Social Security Act in 1935. The waiting week is treated much like an insurance deductible. Many people are down for a week, and then they're right back to work. To save money to the trust fund, they decided, well, we'll see if there's really a period of unemployment before benefits would kick in. And so they decided on the waiting week, and that's how that came about. Now, one of the issues with the people in this particular disaster is they were just down that 1 week. I had a brilliant idea to maybe, well, we'll just double the second week to compensate them. And then my staff reminded me, great idea, Tom, but they're only down a week. So it was a noble idea, but it really didn't achieve the end. I got it by the feds, but it still doesn't help these people.
Yeah.
So that was the intent, though, basically, an insurance deductible and to really address significant lengths of unemployment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, along with the creativity that the Employment Department was working on, and I really do want to applaud them, we thought through a number of different scenarios. We even thought of a voucher paid for through a different fund altogether, not monitored at all, not having anything to do with unemployment. I think we were settling on the inconvenience voucher or the we're going to help you voucher or something like that. And basically the bottom line is if the feds find out that that's what we were doing, they'd still penalize us. Even if it doesn't come out of the trust, even if it doesn't come out of anything related to, they would penalize us because they want that policy in place. So just confounding.
If I may, Mr. Chair,
please.
I want to clarify. The state of Washington, the legislature is contemplating this very issue. They do not have the ability to waive the waiting week either. Their fiscal impact will be $15.4 million, and they have not settled on the final language like this amendment is proposed, but that's what they're wrestling with right now, just like we are.
Very good.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
So just to be clear, the policy behind the waiting week is to keep the trust funds solvent, I guess. And so do we have a problem with keeping our unemployment trust funds solvent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, we do not. Oregon has a model trust fund, and I have a quote from the Honorable Representative Witt on my whiteboard in my office that Oregon understands how to maintain a solvent trust fund. So we don't have that issue now.
It seems like a policy beyond its time. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair Lim.
Yes. Just the legal questions. We are passing this amendment on speculation that the federal government is going to pass. Could we do that? I just want to clarify that issue. It is not conditional, but it is a speculation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, what we're intending is to have the amendment basically say that we're not going to pass a bill that would violate federal law. So it doesn't depend on federal law changing. It just that if federal law does change, then we can execute it the way we'd like to. So,
Paul, would you just kind of explain that sequence? In other words, mm-hmm. this amendment does what, and then that precludes?
I'm going to let the author of the amendment actually.
Mr. Chair, before he begins, may I excuse myself?
Please.
I do on the floor. Thank you for the courtesy.
Again, thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Lim. The amendment would basically, or the bill itself would basically be on the books, and it would be held basically in abeyance until federal law was changed, and we would no longer face a penalty. Once the law was changed, then this provision, the way the waiting week would become enacted.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
I understand that, but I want to make sure legally we can legislate with a speculation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, I've been running language, various scenarios by the U.S. Department of Labor. While they have not seen this final language, they basically have agreed that if we had a law in the books that said we wouldn't do anything until that the federal law changed, we would be fine.
Okay. Okay. Follow up.
Please.
Just a comment.
Yes.
I think we have a fundamental philosophical problems of our people,
mm-hmm.
and our economy built on own and spend it. And this is a very bad example to many people. I know government cannot fix all the personal problems. Sometimes each individual must take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
That responsibility to save. And somehow our culture has to change. And I come from the other countries in Korea a long time ago. Many Asian people, they save, you know. And in the time of a disaster, they have a reserve to do that. And somehow we need to teach our children and the people, whatever circumstances it might be, we need to save for the emergency. And of course, the state government, federal government has to come up to help them. But we cannot shy away from our personal responsibility on this issue. I think it is time we need to teach our children how they save in the future. So take care of themselves.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. And I think that your point is well taken. The rate of savings in the United States is among the lowest in the industrialized world. There are many economists, I think, that would suggest that our economy would be much stronger if we had a higher savings rate. So certainly I think that we would be well served by doing that. I think we also have to remember that in a time of emergency, many folks are completely wiped out. Your point is well taken, and I think we need to find that balance between individual responsibility and an individual's need for help in times of a disaster. So thank you for your comments,
Mr. Chair.
Additional comments or questions? Yes, Representative Huffman, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt. So if I'm hearing this right, basically in this situation, this disaster, there's not going to be any help for these individuals because of, I mean, you had explained that the feds would look, and if we took the money from any other pot of money that we'd still get penalized. So I'm following that there's no help for these, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, that's correct. In this particular instance, we can't get the $121.5 to them. But the reason we're here actually asking for the bill is to send a signal and to basically have it in place so we can use it as leverage with the Congress to force the fact that there are now two systems. Those states that have not volatile economies where they can be helped, and those states that have more volatile economies where they can't be helped. And that's really the purpose. It's very frustrating that we can't help these folks in this case.
Please follow up, sir. I agree with Representative Lim. Looking at the timing of this disaster, chances are that these individuals that were not high wage earners probably had already begun buying some Christmas gifts and stuff, so their pay situation or savings, if you will, was probably even more of a disaster than normal, say if it had happened in August. So the timing of this disaster compounded the situation, I would suspect.
The perfect storm, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Representative Holby.
Well, I just do need to comment for just a minute. I mean, savings is a great idea for people, but people at the lower end of the wage scales, you know, their wages have not kept pace with the cost of living, and so it's very difficult to say, you know, it's their responsibility to save enough to get by. You know, people live, a great number of people in our society live from paycheck to paycheck because their wages simply have not kept pace in our economy. And to, you know, I guess levy some responsibility on them to say, well, you should have done this, you know, I think is just, you know, it's a great model, but it's just not possible for a lot of people.
Mr. Chair,
I just had to say that, so I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mr. Chair,
Vice Chair Lim,
additional comment.
Yes.
I don't mean to go into deep in this matter, but and I'm talking in a general point of view,
yes.
Not just talking about the special, you know, it just happens to anybody, unexpected, and then it is that the state and the federal government responsibilities, including our neighbors, to have the victims being caught in such a dramatic way. But in general terms, and I came here 42 years ago without a penny in my pocket, nothing. And then I did janitor work and gardening, all kinds of work. From the beginning, I saved. And I didn't depend on the state and the federal government to help me out when the time comes. Of course, the states and government might help us, but I didn't depend on it. I made my own plan. We always saved. Still saving, and then I'm talking about the culture of our country. Sometime in the future, we need to change and teach our children that the preparation in the future. Even we are going to the war, we have always reserve. So, you know that I'm just talking about in the general terms. So I'm hoping that our children learn of this mistake and they are prepared for the future disaster.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. Your words are well taken.
Words of wisdom.
They're words of wisdom.
Thank you.
From a very wise man. Thank you, Vice Chair Lim. Additional questions or comments? Tom, you had mentioned earlier that you'd alluded to the fact that the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund was on solid ground. I just want to take that one step further for the record and ask you the question, were we to, in this instance or future disasters, and I know it's hard to determine how many folks might be impacted by a future disaster, but is there any sense that if we were sometime in the future to allow payment of the first week, that we would jeopardize the solvency of the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund?
Mr. Chair, that's an excellent question. As far as jeopardizing the solvency, we would not jeopardize the solvency because the fund is self-correcting. There are 8 tax rate schedules.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall, in 2005 when we had a change in the rates, we lowered them because we were so solvent, kind of smoothed them out. We came before your committee.
Yes.
So what we would jeopardize, we are in tax rate schedule 2 currently, which is mm-hmm. the second lowest.
Mm-hmm.
What we would do then is we would raise taxes to cover the expenditure, which would then put the burden over on employers who, in the same token, in a disaster, could be hurting as well. So mm-hmm. that's the risk we run, is bumping up the taxes for employers. Mm-hmm. The solvency would remain not a non-issue because, again, it's self-correcting.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And without putting you on the spot, our reserves at this point are in the neighborhood of, do you know?
The trust fund is around $1.9 billion.
Thank you. And how does that compare to annual claims or weekly claims or whatever would be a convenient figure for you to use?
I'm not quite sure of the question, Mr. Chair. I will tell you, though, our claims numbers, mm-hmm. we're filing about 1,000 new claims a week, mm-hmm. more than we were a year ago at this very time.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So the economy, in my world, the economy is slowing. We're seeing more claims. Our weekly claims load is up about 8,000 claims a week. So
caution is prudence at this point.
That would be my advice, but that's not my role.
I understand. Thank you.
That's why you guys get the big bucks.
Thank you very much, Tom. Very, very much.
Mr. Chair, I yes. have one more question.
Please, Vice Chair.
What happened to those people after 26 weeks, in case if they couldn't still recover, still in the almost the same situation, then what happens?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chairman, currently there are no benefit extensions after 26 weeks. The average duration for an unemployment claim in Oregon right now is right about 14 weeks, 13 and a half to 14 weeks.
Okay.
So we're not seeing as much of exhaustion as we had in the past.
Okay.
But right now, after 26 weeks, there are no extensions.
Okay. No federal, no state.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
If there are no further questions or comments, I'm going to thank and then dismiss our panel.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we appreciate your time today. Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, Bill Kluding. And as Mr. Kluding's coming up, is there anyone else from the audience that would like to testify? We have a panel. Good morning.
Thank you, Chair Witt. For the record, Bill Kluding, Partners Industrial Council. I appreciate the comments from the various members of the committee. I call this is a, I appreciate the sponsors bringing this bill forward. This is what I call a bill that Oregon is helping its own. You've got to put yourself in these folks' shoes. If you've never been through one of these disasters, my members have, and a lot of people have, but first thing you got to do is save your family's life and your own. Some of these people went out and their vehicles had already floated away. No phones, no nothing. And then as the water recedes, they're trying to salvage what they can out of their homes. But on top of this, they went to bed that night probably without hardly any money in their pockets. And if they did and they went back, they probably couldn't find it. I know there's going to be a lot of hurdles if we pass this, but it needs to be passed, and that'll be one less hurdle. We can move on to the next step. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Mike Sullivan from AWPPW. I'm the political director for the Oregon area. I talk funny on Wednesday mornings. Okay. There's an old...
Mike, excuse me. Could you tell us what AWPPW
I'm sorry, an acronym. In another committee, I would have been fined for it. That's the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. Thank you, Chair Witt.
Thank you very much.
There's an old joke that you work like you get paid a little bit every two weeks. And listening to Representative Paul Hovey, all my career was a wage earner. As a steel worker, which I spent 39 years I saw massive layoffs, 32-hour work weeks, no fault of my own. It took me 7 years to get through my apprenticeship, thanks to a bad trade policy by the federal government. And it doesn't end there. I mean, when you look at this state and the timber policies that we have no sustainable yield. It continues. So I think the term is discretionary spending. When you take the wage earner's ability away to make a wage, they take what they make to spend to house themselves, feed themselves, and clothe themselves. They would like to save, I'm sure, but the ability is not there. But it goes further. We have problems now with racism because we have unwanted workers in the state. They come here not by choice. They come here to work because of our policies, again, NAFTA namely. The middle class of Mexico has been destroyed. And I can go on to the WTO, the mother load of all policies, which eventually will take away our democracy, and in the process has. So my point in all this is that this is great. This bill is terrific, and it should be done. Again, I appreciate Representative Paul Holvey's testimony in the sense that the policy needs to be changed on a waiting week. It's rather absurd. But I'll leave you with this, what I've said when I've had my testimony in Washington, D.C. on WTO and the like, is name me an empire that ever existed that didn't have the ability to make metal. And we're getting to the point where we don't make anything in this country. We just import things. And we have to turn that around. I'm sure then we'd have plenty of savings. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Sybil Hebb. I'm an attorney with the Oregon Law Center, which is a provider of civil legal assistance to low-income people throughout Oregon. Our mission is to try to resolve the issues of low-income people and provide them with access to justice. And I wanted to speak in favor of the proposal outlined by this bill and appreciate the work that was done to bring it forward and appreciate the committee's attention to these issues. The basic purpose of the unemployment insurance system in our nation is to provide a safety net in times of emergency when people are without their source of income through no fault of their own. They lose their jobs either because they're laid off or because of a disaster or for some reason that is not related to misconduct or some behavior of theirs. And that safety net is at no time more essential than when the entire community surrounding that individual is in crisis, such as when a natural disaster has happened. And so we really appreciate the efforts to try to preserve the working of that safety net while even during that waiting week and getting rid of that waiting week. Our offices received just floods of phone calls from people who were in dire straits in the aftermath of the emergency on the coast, and we saw people's problems get exacerbated by the fact that, and sort of snowball by the fact that they were without resources in that initial time period. And so from our perspective, it would be just a great help and would help people more easily resolve the emergencies and prevent further burden on the community around them, not to mention on their families. So we thank you and appreciate the attention, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Vice Chair Lipkin,
please. I just want to find out if someone worked 10, 20 years and saved $50,000, $100,000, are they eligible to get this unemployment insurance?
Chair Witt and Representative Lim, members of the committee, the unemployment insurance is not dependent on income. It's dependent on your work history and the amount of dollars that basically the taxes that you have paid into the system as an employee. So it doesn't depend on your level of savings.
Okay. Thank you. That helps.
You're welcome.
Additional questions or comments for our panel?
Sybil, without... First of all, let me get your last name again, please.
Sure. It's Hebb, H-E-B-B.
Thank you. I actually had it right. So. Sybil, without trying to put you on the spot, I'm just curious because, frankly, this is an area where I haven't had much experience in, but in the aftermath of the disaster, what kind of legal assistance did you find disaster victims in need of? I just think this would be good knowledge for...
Well, Chair Witt and members of the committee, really, it was the gamut. Number one, I think whenever people are desperate, they have questions and they're looking for help of many kinds. The legal problems that we saw coming forward were, for example, you know, my savings were wiped out. I'm not getting my paycheck. I can't pay my rent. What's that going to do with my landlord, who's also in dire straits and is worried? And so, you know, the availability, for example, of the unemployment check makes it easier for the tenant to pay the rent, which makes it easier for the landlord to continue with his business, and you know, it's the whole system starts to work better. But there were many problems related to housing, both home ownership and mortgage payments, as well as rental assistance payments. Questions about how do I get food? Is there some sort of benefit that I might qualify for that can help my family move forward? Examples of, you know, suddenly my car is flooded, I can't get to work, am I going to be fired, what's my relationship with my employer? So there really was just the whole gamut of questions, and I'd be happy to get some more specific examples from the folks. I don't personally answer the hotlines that receive these questions, but I get reports from our staff who do. So I'd be happy to provide you with some more details.
Well, thank you. That's helpful. Now, when I'm asked the very same questions, I have someone to turn to. I just call Sybil.
Please.
So, thank you. Additional questions or comments? Panel members, thank you very, very much. I appreciate your testimony today. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify today? I'm not seeing anyone. Committee members, yes, Representative Huffman.
If you would indulge, Mr. Chair, I was remiss yesterday in not following your flower giving. I should have given flowers, and I always believe in giving flowers when they're due and when people are alive. And General Caldwell not only was extremely helpful in this disaster situation, but as a whole, he has just... performed that way throughout his career. As Colonel Caldwell, one evening we were flying back from Washington, D.C. I was not an elected official or anybody. I'd just been working with the National Guard on some projects. And regarding the new armory proposed for the Dalles, I went back to his seat in the plane, and he indulged me and was very polite. And it turned out he was actually listening, and I invited him to the Dalles to look at a proposal that we had for the new armory. And 2 weeks later, he was in the Dalles taking the tour. And so he's very responsive. He listens. He's awesome. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Representative Huffman. He is awesome, and again, he's a man. The word "no" is not in his vocabulary. I don't, frankly, Representative Huffman, I don't think I could count the number of times we called the military department. We need another generator. We need this. We need that, and on and on and on and on and on, and to the point where you start feeling guilty at some point, and never once, not once, did we hear the word "no." It was, "Well, I'm not sure where I'm going to get that, but we had it within 5 hours, and that was another set of generators." So it's a can-do outfit, and the state of Oregon is very well served by the general's leadership. So thank you for that. Committee members, just so that we know kind of where what my intentions are, I am not going to entertain any amendments today. At least it's not my intention to do so. But rather to work this bill on Monday. And I hope that will work also for the two vice chairs.
Yes, and may I know why you are not entertaining the amendment?
Well, Vice Chair Lim, just so that we have enough opportunity, I think, for everyone to digest the information that has been brought before us. It's not because I have any reluctance at all, but I would like to have the ability to work on the three bills on Monday. So,
okay. Anything further?
Thank you very much, committee members. Certainly appreciate that. Again, many thanks to everyone who testified today. And with that, we stand adjourned until tomorrow. Thank you, everyone.
that I'll get the paperwork pulled out.
Okay.
And ask you for a signature.
What a revolver out.